This is Dishin' Dirt with Gary Pickren, South Carolina's only podcast dedicated to the real estate agent craft. And now, the host of Dishin' Dirt, Gary Pickren.
And greetings and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Dishin' Dirt. I'm your often opinionated but rarely wrong host, Gary Pickren, coming to you from the beautiful offices of Blair Cato Pickren Cash Line in downtown Columbia, South Carolina, this, the third week of April 2024. So after taking 1 week off of the Sitzer Burnett case, we're going to jump right back on it, and we are going to talk about how to have the discussion with your buyer about commission after the Sitzer Burnett case. And as y'all know, there is so much misinformation out in the media today, so many rumors that are completely false, misleading, that the consumer is kind of at a loss as to what the status of real estate agent commissions are. So we're going to talk about how we discuss that with our buyer. But before we jump into that, I wanted to remind y'all, May 2nd at the Tin Roof here in Columbia, South Carolina, starting at 5 o'clock, we will have our annual Cinco de Mayo event, and it's going to be a lot of fun this year. We have free beer and margaritas and a taco bar for everybody, and our grand prize giveaway this year are two tickets to see the farewell tour of Aerosmith. Yes, one of the greatest rock and roll bands in the history of the world. And we have two tickets for one lucky agent to go to see Aerosmith in Charlotte. So it's going to be a big night, a lot of fun. It's one of our best attended events. It's just to come out and have fun and mingle and get to know more people in your industry. So all real estate agents are invited. We hope to see you there. Please come and please bring a friend who's a real estate agent. And let's have a good time on May 2nd. So y'all come on out and we will have a good time. All right, so let's go ahead now and start talking about how we deal with buyers post Sitzer Burnett. For me, it's all about the value proposition. In fact, I've been saying this for years, that the role of the real estate agent has morphed over the past couple of years, and with all the disinformation about the settlement out there, a lot of it from our very, very dishonest media, we are staring at another change in our industry. But I don't think it's something we need to fret over. We've been here before, and we've had to adapt, whether it was the downturn from 9/11, 2008, COVID. We've always had to adapt in our industry when things are presented to us. And I think this is another one of these opportunities where there will be some adaption, but it will not be catastrophic. I think there's a lot of misinformation. I think a lot of people are just nervous, rightfully so. I'm very nervous about it. But I think when we look at everything, we will understand that it is not what we believe it is. So the main point that I think everyone needs to understand in this, particularly when we're dealing with our buyer, is understanding that this is not a shift in consumer mentality. If it was a shift in consumer mentality, meaning all the buyers of the world all of a sudden decided we don't want to pay a buyer commission and we're not going to pay a buyer agent commission, then we would have a bigger issue. But no one is coming forward saying we don't think real estate agents are valuable. No one's coming forward saying that we don't think real estate agents should get paid. It's really not a shift in consumer mentality. This is kind of a forced change from a lawsuit that, quite frankly, as I've mentioned multiple times, I don't think really had the merit that the lawyers on the plaintiff's side was presenting. And I do still think there's a good chance it could get overturned. Warren Buffett says he's going to fight it all the way to the Supreme Court. And I think there's enough errors there that it might actually get overturned. Regardless if that happens or not, it's a change in how we do business. But the change is coming institutionally and not coming as a shift in consumer mentality. And I think that's very important. I understand there are still a few consumers out there because of this case that believe they can do it themselves and they're not ever going to have to pay a real estate agent again. But guys, they've always been out there. That consumer has always been here. That's your for sale by owner who think that they can save themselves 3-6%, whatever it may be, by not having a real estate agent and putting the property up there themselves. But these same consumers also fail to realize that on average, according to the National Association of Realtors, when you sell a property without a real estate agent, you get a whopping 24% less than properties that are listed with real estate agents. So they save 3-6%, but they lose out, 18-21%. So great job, Beavis. You saved your real estate agent commission, but you cost yourself another 18-21% in the value of your house. The good news here is, according to Keeping Current Matters, 91% of consumers have said that they believe it would be very stressful to navigate the home buying process without a real estate broker. I would call these 91% the smart, common sense people, the people who understand life, who understand that things sometimes cost money in life to get them done and get them done correctly. The 9% are the Beavis and the Buttheads. I just think they can do it all themselves. They have all the answers to the world. There's nothing you're going to be able to tell these people to convince them that they need real estate agents. But we're talking 91%. You can't get 91% of anybody to agree on anything. If I was to tell 100 people, I'm going to give you $100 each, 9% of the people would have a complaint about it. So that's an amazing number, that 91% of the people believe that it would be very stressful to do a home buying process without a real estate broker. It goes back to what I said earlier. There has not been a shift in consumer mentality. That's very important. But the polls themselves, that poll right there shows you and teaches you where your discussion with the buyer needs to go. Ergo, you need to be talking about how stressful it would be to navigate the home buying process without you. Because if 91% of the people in the world say it would be very stressful to do it, prove it to them. And those 91% of the people are going to want to use you. The other 9%, the Beavis and Buttheads of the world, they weren't going to use you anyway. They're going to try to do it for sale by owner, thinking they are going to save money. But we know, in the end, they won't. They will lose at least 18 to 21%. The second stat's also important. 87% of people surveyed said a real estate broker is an essential trusted advisor for a home buyer. Bingo. That is what it's all about. Creating that trust with your buyer so that your buyer knows that you're a trusted, essential person in the transaction and that they need you. Again, 87%, an astoundingly high number. We're not talking 50% or 52%. We're talking 91% and 87%. Astounding numbers. And then thirdly, even the Northern Virginia Association of Realtors did a study recently, and they found that 70% of their consumers believe that when buying a home, you should definitely have someone representing your interest during the whole process. Not transaction brokerage, representing you. They use the word definitely, not just might, should, or maybe a good idea, but definitely. So these three polls here show you where it all sits in your explanation with the buyer. It all begins and ends with earning the trust and showing why the transaction being handled by yourself is going to be very stressful and impossible to navigate. That's the value of the real estate agent. Those three stats right there are the very groundwork for you in explaining this to the buyer. So first I want to do is I want to talk about how we got here. And I'm not talking about the Sister Burnett case. We all know how we got here because of that. I just want to talk about how we got here as an industry. If you will think back from the agents who have been doing this for many years, and I've mentioned this for the last 20 years during continual education classes. In the 1990s, you were the gatekeeper of information. There was no internet. And so if a real estate agent wasn't around, the consumer wasn't going to get information. Bottom line, they weren't going to know what houses that were for sale because as the gatekeeper of information, you had it locked down. And I remember the old guard agents were saying back then that when the Al Gore invented the internet, that's a joke. He claimed he invented it. He didn't. But when he said he invented the internet, I remember agents telling me back in the early 90s, this would be the end of real estate agents as we know it. That there would never be a need for real estate agents. If they can get all the information on the internet, why in the world would they hire you? And that was because the thinking of real estate agents back in the 90s was that you were solely the gatekeeper of information. And once the information got out, then you were no longer the gatekeeper, so people wouldn't need you. And so those people who didn't embrace the internet and accept the change and maintain that they were still the gatekeeper of information, they were right. That was the end of those. But everybody else in the business, they adapted and they recognized that their value-added proposition wasn't that they were the gatekeeper of information, but they were, in fact, something else. And so the whole value-added proposition changed from I control the information to now I am providing you a different value. And we'll talk about the different value in a minute. If you think back about the 90s and the guarding of the information, it wasn't just that they had knew all the listings, there was no internet. It was greater than that, because if you wanted to find property back in the 90s and there was no internet, then the only way you could find property was to look in the newspaper, look at these tiny little ads, and try to figure out what 4BA, 2BR, FORG meant, which most people didn't. The price was rarely in the newspaper ad, so you had to call. And so it was a very frustrating process. The other thing you could do is drive around all the neighborhoods and look at signs, and then you'd have to call the agent anyway on the sign. That was very time-consuming. Or you could go to one of your neighborhood Mexican restaurants and find the magazines in the racks of all the properties that were for sale. Now, of course, the magazine was usually 2 or 3 months old, so all the properties were completely sold and everything was outdated. But those were really your only options unless you hired a real estate agent. Now, the real estate agent, on the other hand, guarded that information, and they guarded it in what I used to call the real estate Bible. And what this was is, back in the day, we had this big book. It was called the Listings Book, and it came out, I think it was on Thursday in the Midlands, I'm not really sure. But you would have to get all of your information in by like Monday, and then it would come out almost like a catalog, like a Sears catalog would. And for all you guys that are over under 30 years old, Sears used to be a department store that would put all of their items in the catalog and mail it out once a year, and you'd look at it. All you millennials and Gen Zs probably don't know what I'm talking about. But for the rest of us, adults, older adults, I would say, we remember Sears. And that's what this was. This was like a catalog, and it would have every piece of property. It would break it down by zones, just like the MLS does now. And then it would start at price zero and work its way up. So if you wanted to buy a house in Spring Valley, you'd find out what that neighborhood zone was. You would go in there, you start at zero and look all the way up. Now, there were always little black and white pictures with a little tiny write-up. So it wasn't a ton of information, but y'all were the ones who controlled it. And I remember at one point when I actually got to look into the listing agent book for the first time. It was a day when Ron Rowe, who used to be the CEO of Russell Jeffcoat back in the day, I went with him to a closing representing the seller, and he had the book, and I looked at it, and I said, Ron, can I look at that? And he said, sure, and he passed it to me, and when I opened it, like confetti and fireworks and angels and music all came out of it, and it was like, whoa! And so I looked at it, and I was like, this is the greatest thing in the world, and I was hooked. I wanted this information. But as I said earlier, when the internet came into being, which I started practicing law in 1995, I think about 97, 98 was where the internet started getting into offices, and it was probably around 99 or 2000 where it was in everybody's office, and then the early 2000s where it became more prevalent in terms of having real estate business shown on the internet. But once the internet came, obviously that value proposition was gone. You weren't the gatekeepers of information. That was not it. It no longer was about information because we all had the information. And in fact, the consumer had more information probably than you did, because you were having to keep up with a growing community of Greenville, Spartanburg, or Lexington and Columbia, or Sumter, Greenville, or whatever, or Kershaw County. And the market was changing. It was growing so quickly that you could not know every house for sale, its price, all of the details about it. But if you were a homeowner and you were looking only in one neighborhood, you could go in there and do your research and know every house that sold in the last year, that's price, its square footage, and actually have more information than the real estate agent. But where the value proposition came in is, just because you had the information, what do you do with it? And that's where we kind of stay, or staying now with the case is, so you have all these opportunities, but what are you going to do with them? And I think that's where we're going to explain to you in a minute why I think this is actually not going to be a bad thing. But the value proposition changed with the invention of the internet, and no longer could you claim to be the gatekeeper of information. You now became the advisor, the advocate, or the counselor. And that's what you were here for. You were here to decipher all the information that was available to everybody. You were to help make the best decisions for your consumer. The consumer made the decisions, but you were able to provide all of the facts so that they can make all of those decisions. And so, and that's where we've been really since the early 2000s, that the true value of a real estate licensee, and why people should hire a licensee to list their property or to work with them as a buyer, was because you were here to advise, advocate, and counsel for them. And that's it. That's the main reason. That really hasn't changed, guys. That's not going to really change here today. It's just, how are we going to explain that value proposition based on advising, advocating, and counseling, but also based on the fact that 91% of the consumers think it would be a very stressful process to navigate without having a real estate broker, then 87% believe you are a trusted advisor. So we're going to hit on that advising aspect of it, because 87% think you're a trusted advisor, and then we're going to really hammer home this 91% of the people who believe that it would be too stressful to do it without you. So once again, we're at this crossroads in real estate, and we're going to circle back to what I was teaching 15 to 20 years ago for just a minute here before we talk about the actual message. And that's that real estate agents spend a tremendous amount of time learning how to do a listing presentation. Every time y'all have family reunion or expo or whatever EXP calls it, or Blue for Coldwell Bank, or whatever your event's called, y'all have classes on how to do listing presentations. And you can spend money on the internet. You can go to YouTube and watch video after video on the best ways to do listing presentations. But we don't see a lot of that on the buyer side. And part of the reason is that there's very few states in the United States, I think it was 12, that have buyer agency. So for those that don't have buyer agency, they never really concentrated on how to explain the legality of buyer agency to the consumer. But because South Carolina is actually at the forefront of something other than Rickett cases and poor education, it's kind of really neat to know that we have these opportunities because of the fact that we were already doing buyer agency. So we already got this opportunity in front of us because we've already been working on it to really do a great presentation for the buyer, make them understand why using a buyer agent is still a necessary part of the transaction. So moving forward, it probably is going to be more important, definitely equally important, but maybe even more important than your listing presentation. If somebody's calling you to list their house, I don't think you're going to have to spend a lot of time having to convince them that they still need to pay a real estate commission to you. I think they understand that when they call you. But it's working with the buyer that the buyer is going to be questioning, can they afford to pay you? Should they be on the line to pay you? Are they on the hook? Is the seller on the hook? And so that's why I think it's going to be more important to understand this buyer presentation even more so than the listing presentation. And there's this one huge secret in real estate that I want to make sure everyone understands, that in every real estate transaction, I know this is going to be mind-blowing to y'all, but this is a big old secret in real estate. In every real estate transaction, not only is there a seller, there's also a buyer. I know that's mind-blowing, but we tend to overlook in our industry, even before this case, we overlook the fact that every transaction not only has a buyer, a seller, but also has a buyer involved in the transaction. And so we can either decide today that, oh, well, I'm just not going to deal with the buyer. It's going to be too difficult. I'm just going to be a listing agent with the other 40,000 real estate agents in the market. Or I'm going to adapt what I'm doing, figure out the best way to explain this to buyers, and I'm going to own the buyer market. And I think that's what we need to look at, is that I think the more seasoned, advanced, better agents might actually find themselves migrating toward the buyer side, with the younger, less experienced agents handling the seller side, because it's going to take less creativity, less knowledge, less ability to sell to get a listing than it is to get a buyer. And so I think we might see that. But it's a secret everybody needs to understand. You get paid on the buyer side, you get paid on the seller side. So either way, you're good to go. So now let's look at what your message is going to be to the buyer. First of all, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this first part here because I've done this in multiple podcasts, which I'll even include a link here in the show notes for you. But you've got to perfect your buyer agency disclosure. And I have discussed multiple times for over 20 years or so on the 7 keywords you must use every time to give a meaningful explanation of buyer agency. And you need to be prepared for what's coming now is the objections that a buyer's going to have on buyer agency, or the possibility of paying you and not having the seller pay you. So, you've got to really truly learn this value proposition. The value proposition for me comes with trust first. The way to win the trust is by going over buyer agency in a proper manner, starting with the term. I'm going to give you one of the keywords here. I am required by law to disclose to you agency. That's actually two of the 7 words. When I tell a buyer that I'm required by law to do something, that is powerful. I am required to do something, and I'm doing it. I'm trustworthy. You should be working with me. Remember, again, 87% of respondents said the real estate broker is an essential trusted advisor. You just showed you are trusted because what did you do? You told them you had to do something by law, and you did it. And you disclosed it to them. Nobody wants to be told anything. Don't tell me nothing. But people want to be disclosed. Disclosed sounds like this is great secretive information that you're giving me. So go back, listen to that podcast on how to disclose buyer agency, and that's going to be a big help to you in getting buyers to go ahead and sign with you, because you're going to win on the value proposition of trust. Now, the buyers are going to come to you probably in two different positions. The first position they're going to say is, I don't need a buyer agent. I'll save money if I don't have a buyer agent. We already know that's wrong, but we're going to talk about that. And then secondly, I think buyers will come to you saying, the seller won't pay for the buyer agent, and I just can't afford to pay you. And we're going to talk about that as well. Now, as I talk about this, I think it's important to read this one quote that I saw on MN News the other day. It says, your option is you can be transparent, work through their questions and concern, and tell consumers that you're learning along with them, and you will do your best to hear them out, be open to new ideas, and create a strategy to work with less commission if the transaction or consumers call for it and are uncooperative. In other words, listen to the warning signals and prepare for the storm in advance. Or the other ones, you can just moan and groan about what's going on and try to tell everybody how wrong they are. I don't think that works. I think transparency is the way to work. And if you look at the objections of the buyer, I think both of those address essentially the same thing that we need to be addressing through our value proposition. Now, today, I'm not going to give you words to memorize. I'm not going to say, here's how you say it and here's what you're going to say it, because it needs to be in your own voice. It needs to be from your point of view. But here's what I believe needs to be in this value prop so that when these issues are raised, you're going to go ahead and be able to address them. So first and foremost, I think you need to convey to the consumer that the National Association of Realtors settlement did not change anything except for how commissions are advertised on the multiple listing service. That's it. That's the only thing that changed was how the commission was advertised on the multiple listing service. Nothing else changed. Buyer commissions were not outlawed. They weren't sanctioned. They weren't limited. They aren't prohibited. Nothing disallows a seller from paying for a buyer's agent commission now, tomorrow, or in the future. Nothing at all. Nothing sets a typical commission rate, lowers a rate, or limits a commission rate in any matter. The sole purpose of the settlement was simple. Instead of making the buyer agent commission amount as set by a listing agent, regardless of the contract situation, it is now a negotiated amount that's between the buyer and the buyer's agent, and ultimately then the seller and the buyer, depending on the terms of the contract and all the factors involved. That's all it does. It changed it from being a set amount that never changed regardless what happened in the transaction and between the listing agent and the buyer agent, to now it has the buyer agent, the listing agent all involved in making the decision as to what it's going to be and how it's going to be paid. That's all it did. Didn't change anything else. The parties and not the agents now get to determine how much the buyer commission the seller will pay. That's it. Nothing else. I think it's very important that the consumer understands that. Buyers still need agents, and it will still be in the seller's best interest to compensate the buyer's agent. And I think once you open by this, that dispels a lot of the rumors and myths of what's happening. Secondly, here's why it is paramount for a buyer to contract with a buyer agent, and by extension, why it's paramount for the seller to absolutely want a buyer to have a buyer agent, even if it requires them to pay. First of all, we know there will be more money in the transaction when they're represented by an agent. It's already baked into the price in a lot of ways. But here are the things that need to be raised to the buyer. Because go back to the very first statement, 91% believe it would be an absolute horrific mess to deal with a real estate transaction without having a seasoned agent working with them. So the first thing is, how is a buyer to get access to the property without buyer representation? They're going to have to arrange for meetings with the listing agent to see the property. So we know that they will see very few houses. Because today, if they hire a real estate agent to go show them houses, we have a lockbox key, and you can go show them 20, 30, 40 houses in an afternoon. But otherwise, they're going to have telephone calls with every listing agent, wait for the listing agent to get back with them, try to schedule it on Saturday around the listing agent schedule, and try to get in there. But they can't just say, I'll come sometime Saturday morning. They're going to want to have a definite schedule, so they're going to be scheduling these things out every 30 minutes or every hour, so it's going to severely limit the number of houses. You know, sometimes when you look at a house, you walk in, and before you even get through the first door, you're like, it's not for me. I want to leave. Other times, you might want to spend an hour there, but you're going to be on a schedule to try to keep all of these appointments. So good luck with that. Good luck with scheduling. Good luck with getting the listing agents to call you back quickly to schedule a time that meets in your schedule, and you're not driving all over this side of town to that side of town and back and forth. Trying to schedule that is going to be an absolute nightmare. And you can absolutely forget if you just drive by the house and see it and go, oh, I want to go see that real quick. If you're with your agent doing that on a Saturday or a Sunday, they can go pop the key and you can go right on in with them. But if they're not there, good luck. You're going to have to get the listing agent to meet you out at the house. And if the listing agent's busy or doing other things, guess what? You're just not going to see the house. Which is one of the selling points to the seller as to why you want your buyer working with buyer agents. Because that means there'll be a whole lot more people seeing your house, because if you have to wait for your listing agent to schedule appointments for every person who calls, not many people are going to be able to see your house. Number two, if you're not represented in the transaction buyer, what contract are you going to use? Can't use a realtor contract. It's only for the realtors. We actually have two contracts in the state of South Carolina for the most part, the CCRA and the SCR contract. Did you know that, buyer? Do you know what the differences are? Which one should you use? In what situation, what community, and why? Are you going to just hire a lawyer to draft the contract? Well, now you're paying. If the whole purpose of not hiring an agent was to save money, well, now you're paying a lawyer. I think you're better off paying the real estate agent than having lawyers draft these contracts, which will then be negotiated and go back and forth and cost you even more money. So what are you going to do? You're going to use legal doom and get you a piece of crap contract that has absolutely nothing to do with South Carolina law? How do you know if the seller's offering or asking price is even a legitimate price? How do you determine the comps in the neighborhood to determine if the price is legit or if it's too high? And don't kid yourself, buyer, into thinking that you actually know what the property's worth or that the appraisal will save you. You don't know unless you have a seasoned agent who can run the comps for you. How do you handle multiple offers? What happens if the seller comes back to you and wants best and final? What are you going to do there? What is your strategy? How are you going to figure that out? How do you navigate that? And in a hot market, that is a relatively common thing. How do you make an offer that's contingent on sell and close or close of the property? Do you even know what the difference is? How do you move from a sell and close to a contract? How does any of that work? Oh, the real estate agent would help with that if you just had a real estate agent. How do you get the seller disclosure form? When do you get the seller disclosure form? Is the seller exempt? When they tell you they're exempt, are they really exempt? Is a rental property really exempt? Is it really exempt because the person's never lived in the house or doesn't know anything about it? Or was their dad's house? Is that an exemption? Do you just accept that at face value because you have no one telling you otherwise? Think you're going to be able to figure that out? Good luck. How do you possibly negotiate when you're a party of the transaction? You're too close to that transaction. If your contract ratified, when does your due diligence begin? Does it begin today, tomorrow, the next holiday? Does it begin over the weekend? How do I count those days? When do those days end? Does it end on a weekend? Does it end on a holiday? Does it end at 6 p.m. or 8 a.m.? What is it? In fact, what is due diligence? What can I do in due diligence? Should I be doing more? Should I be doing less? And who's going to do these inspections? Do you even know a termite letter, a heating and air company? How do you know that they're good? Are you going to rely on the seller to give you that information? I'm sure they're going to give you the most thorough inspector when you ask their agent to give you an inspector for their house. Who's going to be your lender? Do you know a lender? Are you going to look on the internet? Are you going to look on the board at the restaurant where somebody posted a business card? Who's going to be your closing attorney? What does a closing attorney do? What repairs are you going to ask for once you finish your repairs? Is there a special strategy to that? Do we ask for every single thing that they have, or does the strategy depend on the circumstances, the age of the house, the expense of the repairs versus what kind of deal I've gotten? How are you ever going to negotiate that? How do you even write up the repair request? Is that something you have to have a lawyer do for you and charge you? It's not an easy task. And then how do you guarantee that these repairs are going to get done after it's over? Not sure that you're going to be able to guarantee that. Are you going to go through a walkthrough? Are you even understanding what you're looking for? How do you provide notice during the due diligence, particularly under the South Carolina contract, that you want to terminate the contract? Can you just terminate by sending them an email, or do you have to have a special form that you can't get because you're not a realtor? Maybe that might be a problem for you. Do you have to deliver it in person to the seller to let them know you're terminating? Real estate's a highly technical transaction. You're going to need help navigating through it. The listing agent can't provide the buyer with the advice on these important matters. And nearly 100 more items just like this, because a listing agent can only give advice to their client, and you, the buyer, are not their client, so they cannot give you advice. Lastly, as to the belief that the seller won't pay, I think what you need to do is tell them of all the items that we just went over, if the seller wants to have the most people look at their house and have the transaction actually closed, because as I've said a million times, it's phenomenal to get a bunch of contracts signed. They don't pay anybody anything. A contract's only good if it closes. If it doesn't close, seller doesn't get their money, buyer doesn't get their house, real estate agents don't make their money, the lawyers don't get paid, the real estate agents don't get paid, the lenders don't get paid. So it's great that you get your house under contract or find a house that goes under contract, but it doesn't mean anything unless it closes. If I'm a seller, not only do I want as many people looking at this house as possible, I need the transaction to close. And unless a buyer has an agent on the other side helping them, the chances of it closing are going to be very slim. just not going to happen. The seller doesn't want the transaction to fall apart. It's a risk every seller takes once the property is under contract that it's going to get terminated during their due diligence or fall through other reasons. That's why they need a buyer agent to help the buyer be reasonable, to help these matters through the process. Third, in our market, most buyers are not in the position to cover the real estate commission. So the sellers are going to need to understand that fact, or they're going to lose a large number of buyers if they refuse. And I think that the market's going to bear that out. And that's a comment that you can make to the buyer, is that most of our sellers are going to understand, because they're going to be buyers themselves. That's something that everybody needs to understand, that most people, when they are a seller, then turn around to be a buyer. And so they're going to understand that as a buyer, they're going to need representation. So they're going to expect that somebody buying their house is going to need representation. And they're going to understand that a VA buyer right now is against the law for them to pay a real estate commission. First-time home buyers aren't going to have the money. A lot of people just aren't going to be able to pay it. So if they want to sell their house for the most money, they're going to have to pay it. And so there will be strategies that you can work through to handle that. And so as we move to the second issue, I think this is where we now reiterate that there's nothing to prevent the sellers from paying your commission or requires the buyer to purchase a house that offers commission. I think what we need to tell them is that if it is a requirement for you as the buyer that the seller pays the commission because you are unable to, then that we can submit requests for compensation prior to writing offers and to see what they would entertain. And for those few houses where the seller thinks that they can save a buck and won't offer a buyer commission, those houses you can skip over and go look at the other houses and write offers on those. I believe at the end of the day, the vast majority, and I mean really vast majority, almost universal, that the sellers are going to agree to pay commissions. And that's the bottom line. But the key here at the end of how you negotiate and how you discuss this with the buyer is understanding nothing has changed yet. Cases haven't even been approved by the court, but there are expert minds at the highest level in real estate, the National Association and other places, that will be working on how this new system is going to play out. And there's no reason to freak out. There's no reason to worry about it. But the bottom line is buyers need buyer agents. Sellers need buyers to be represented because they need people looking at their houses and they need offers that will close. And I think as long as your buyer understands these facts, you'll be fine. I think if we follow these simple rules here and show your true value add in words that work for you. Again, what I told you was what the points were. You're going to have to put those in a package, a bow that look really nice and presentable and not so argumentative. Mine was more argumentative because I was arguing them for you on your behalf. But you want to just present these are the things you as the buyer will have to do if you don't have buyer representation. We already know 91% of buyers think it's going to be very stressful if they don't have a real estate agent representing them. So we're going to play on that 91%. So I hope this helps you. We'll continue to monitor the situation. I got Nick Kramitis will be joining us in a couple of weeks to explain what the National Association is working on and maybe some options of how this will actually work as a procedure. And we'll continue to monitor what is going on for you. Don't forget to like us, share us, subscribe to us, tell all the other real estate agents, and let's continue to grow Dish and Dirt so that we can continue to provide this very important information to help you grow your practice. That's the whole point of Blair Cato, is to make sure that you can be the best real estate agent you possibly can be by protecting you and educating you wherever it needs to be. All right, y'all have a great weekend. See you again next week.